SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yama, and welcome to NITV Radio. Bertrand Tungandami Ngaya. I am Bertrand Tungandami. Coming up in your program this Monday, the 16th of September, well, like every Monday afternoon, we have a selection of current affairs stories brought to us by NITV's NOLA program. In the program, we'll also be joined by Cleone Wellington, Chief Executive Leader, Culture and Connections of Waminda, an Aboriginal women's health and leadership organization, as they celebrate their 40th anniversary this week. In the program, we'll also explore the newly passed misinformation laws that give more powers to the federal government to compel social media platforms like X or Meta to comply with Australian misinformation laws. All these stories and more coming to you on NITV Radio after the latest news.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The Native Title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
This bulletin calls for national approach to support ageing stolen generations in aged care. The FBI investigates what it is calling a second apparent attempted assassination of Donald Trump. And a political fight over housing legislation has erupted in federal parliament. The Healing Foundation has called for a national approach to support stolen generations survivors as they navigate the use of aged care services in older age. The Foundation's chairperson, Professor Steve Larkin, says culturally appropriate and trauma-informed is important to allow stolen generations survivors and their descendants to access a quality of life that has been largely denied until now. There are still 17,000 stolen generations survivors across Australia, all of them aged over 50. According to the Landmark Bringing Them Home report in 1997, most Indigenous families have been affected in one or more generations by the forcible removal of one or more children. A nationwide inquiry into youth justice and incarceration has been established by the federal government. Initiated by the Greens, the inquiry will examine the Commonwealth's role in youth justice. Speaking in the Senate, Greens First Nations spokesperson Senator Dorinda Cox said jailing children is failing in this country and called on the Senate to back the inquiry.
The love and the care and the protection that they need is not in an institution. And we have to dismantle that pipeline. That will be your legacy in this place tonight.
The call was voted for unanimously in the Senate. And around 70% of youth incarcerated across the country are Indigenous. Two children have died in youth detention in WA in less than a year. and Queensland has introduced harsher youth justice laws. The Northern Territory says it would lower the age of criminal responsibility back to 10 years and introduce harsher bail laws, while Victoria has walked back its promise to raise the age of criminal responsibility. Officials in the United States have named the gunman behind an apparent assassination attempt against former President Donald Trump. Ryan Wesley Ruth was arrested fleeing in an SUV after a Secret Service agent spotted him with a rifle in the shrubs at Trump's golf course in Florida, where the Republican presidential candidate had been playing a game of golf. A spokesperson for the Donald Trump campaign thanked the Secret Service for keeping Trump safe from harm 2 months after an assassination attempt during his rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. The special agent in charge of the FBI's Miami field office, Jeffrey Vetri, says authorities are still determining the motive.
The FBI has assumed the role as the lead federal law enforcement agency in the investigation of the incident that occurred earlier today at Trump International Golf Course here in West Palm Beach, Florida. We've deployed a number of resources, including the investigative teams, crisis response team members, bomb technicians, and evidence response team members as well.
Speaking on ABC News America, retired senior Secret Service agent Donald Mihalik says the cooperation between agencies is to be commended.
From the minute the shots were fired to the information being put out by the Secret Service to the sheriff's offices, who are their counterparts down there, who were able to take that information, do a rapid investigation using technology, their real crime center, the tremendous advances of the license plate readers, the LPRs, which can passively identify and track cars, really were helpful with the investigation to get this resolved as quickly as it was.
Speaking on the ABC when the news broke, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says it is important that in democracies, differences are resolved at the ballot box and not through violence.
It is good that President Trump has said that he is safe and that the incident, the details of which are still coming out, so it's not quite clear all of those details. But what is clear is that President Trump is safe. That is a good thing.
And the Prime Minister has pushed the Greens to get on board with Labour's housing bills as they reach the Senate this week. There's no clear pathway for the legislation through the Senate, with neither the Coalition or the Greens supporting Labour's Help to Buy or Build to Rent housing initiatives. The Help to Buy shared equity scheme would see the government lend up to 40% of the cost of a house to 40,000 eligible buyers, whilst the Build to Rent tax concession aims to incentivize developers to build affordable rental housing. Housing Minister Claire O'Neill says it's time for politicians to act on housing.
What we've had so far is Peter Dutton trying to stop us from putting this bill into law and the Greens working to support him. We need that to end. We've had lots of politicians talk about their care for home ownership in this parliament over the last 2 years. Now is the time for action.
Concerns over staffing shortages at Ambulance Victoria are mounting after a man died waiting for hours for an ambulance over the weekend. High levels of sick leave left Victoria 50 ambulance crews shot on Saturday night and saw paramedics travelling massive distances to reach sick patients. Victorian Ambulance Union Secretary Danny Hill says he has not seen shortages this bad in years and says the tragic death could have been avoided. Victoria's opposition health spokesperson Georgie Crozier says the situation is deeply concerning and says paramedics need to be supported. Mr. Hill says ambulance staff are working incredibly hard and often have to pick up extra work to keep the community safe.
Look, we see this when crews are fatigued and they're burnt out and they're exhausted. It's hard to come back in and pick up another shift. And Ambulance Victoria relies so much on the goodwill of paramedics coming in to fill shifts on overtime. But if they've had a busy Friday night, they're not going to come in on their days off to work a Saturday night. So, you know, last night we're aware that there were several dozen paramedics who came in on their days off to fill additional shifts to try to keep, you know, prop up the resourcing that was there. But we've still had about 30 crews in metropolitan Melbourne unable to be filled.
Residents in Papua New Guinea are celebrating 49 years since the country became independent. Under the Whitlam government, Papua New Guinea gained independence from Australia on September 16, 1975. The moment was marked at the time with a main ceremony in Port Moresby, with attendees including Prince Charles, Australian Prime Minister Gough Whitlam, and Chief Minister of Papua New Guinea at the time, Michael Somare, who became the country's first Prime Minister. Next year will be 50 years of Papua New Guinea's independence. Australian diplomats say the focus will be to celebrate the contemporary partnership and look ahead to the next 50 years. And Australia has imposed financial sanctions and travel bans on a further five Iranians on the second anniversary of the jailing and death of Mahsa Amini. The 22-year-old woman was arrested in September 2022 for improperly wearing her hijab and died in custody. Her death led to widespread protests by women across Iran. Foreign Minister Penny Wong says the new sanctions apply for five senior security and law enforcement officials who have been involved in the violent repression of protests in Iran. She says the human rights situation in Iran remains dire as female activists continue to be detained and handed death sentences. Train and flight services in Shanghai have been cancelled as Typhoon Bibinka approaches. Residents have been told to prepare for strong winds and torrential rainfall when the typhoon strikes the eastern coast. That has disrupted the travel plans moving for the three-day mid-autumn festival holiday running until Tuesday, 17th of September. This traveler says she planned ahead based on the emergency alert.
We are coming from Australia. We came back to visit our family during the public holidays, and then we knew that typhoon is coming tomorrow, so we rescheduled our train from Monday to Sunday so we can get back to my husband's hometown in Fujian safely.
Donald Trump's running mate J.D. Vance has admitted to creating the falsehood repeated during U.S. election debate about migrants eating pets. The vice presidential candidate justified spreading the unsubstantiated claims to generate media attention as more Republicans declared their support for Kamala Harris. And in sports, Australian Oscar Piastri has revealed he ignored instructions from his race engineer to pull off the daring and precarious overtake that led him to winning the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. Reflecting on what he called probably the best win in my career, Piastri says he chose to make his move with his lap 20 past. He added that in doing so, he was going against what race engineer Tom Stallard had cautioned over the radio, asking him to go easy on his new tyres. The 23-year-old says he decided to take the risk.
After the pit stop, I saw that we'd managed to gain a fair bit of time somehow, and the first lap or two of the first stint, I kind of had half an opportunity but didn't quite get close enough. So I knew that when I was in DRS on that one lap, I knew I had to try everything to make it stick, because if I didn't, then I definitely wasn't going to win the race. So I knew I had to go for it.
And now having a look at the weather around the country: Broome, sunny, 36. Perth, similar conditions, 26. Adelaide, mostly sunny, 18. Melbourne, a shower or 2, 15. Hobart, early shower, 14. Albury-Wodonga, partly cloudy, 14. Canberra, mostly sunny, 17. Wollongong, sunny, 18. Sydney, sunny as well, and a top of 19 degrees. Newcastle, possible shower, 22. Mostly sunny in Brisbane with a top of 23. And mostly cloudy in Townsville with a top of 26. Cairns, a shower or 2, 28. Cloudy day in Alice Springs with a top of 22, a shower or two in Darwin with a top of 34, and in the Torres Strait Islands, cloudy day ahead and a top of 28 degrees. And that is NITV Radio News.
NITV Radio, on radio, online and mobile.
In 2025, SBS will offer three cadetship positions, including one identified placement for an Aboriginal and or Torres Strait Islander candidate culturally and financially supported by NITV National Indigenous Television. All successful cadets participate in the same program of training and work experience.
Today, and let's chase another rainbow right across this great big southern land.
And that was a little bit of country and a little bit of rock and roll by Fitzroy Express. Really an exciting band, an exciting Aboriginal country rock band from the remote Kimberley town of Fitzroy Crossing in WA. I'm Bertrand Tungandame, and you're listening to NITV Radio coming to you from Nam on the Kulin Nation this Monday afternoon. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Cleone Wellington, Chief Executive Leader, Culture and Connections of Waminda. Waminda is an Aboriginal women's health and leadership organization that's celebrating their 40th anniversary this week, and they are based on the New South Wales South Coast. In the program, we also explore the newly passed misinformation laws that give more powers to the federal government to compel social media giants like X or Meta to comply with Australia's misinformation laws. But first, like every Monday afternoon, we have a selection of current affairs stories from an Indigenous perspective brought to us by NITV's NOLA program. Queensland has begun holding educational forums ahead of the launch of its truth-telling and healing inquiry. As Carly Willis reports in the Torres Strait, in the far north of the state, elders and community members are glad the process will finally begin.
On Wyburn, Thursday Island, a celebration. And a coming together to share and listen. Members of Queensland's Truth-Telling and Healing Inquiry are here to raise awareness about their three-year investigation and the role the community will play.
For us, the role is really looking at the impact of colonisation on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, hearing the stories, the evidence of Torres Strait Islander people, of events that occurred across this region.
Betty Tekahika Ni Mabo is the eldest daughter of the late Eddie Koiki Mabo. He led the High Court Mabo decision that abolished the notion of terra nullius and led to native title. She wants her father's behind-the-scenes struggles to be known.
He was fighting for the two big giants of this country, the Commonwealth and the state. He put them down. He was just a one army, and he won the case.
The inquiry will also have access to never-before-seen documents with some restrictions.
There are records that are closed that we won't have access to. There are personal records that we obviously will need consent of people to access, so there's real limits.
But the inquiry has learnt lessons from other states, such as Victoria's Yuruk Justice Commission.
They're actually at the end of their three-year appointment. We are learning a lot from what they have done in Queensland. This is our turn now. So our government is giving us the opportunity to look into Queensland history.
Queensland's first ceremonial hearing is to be held in Meanjin, Brisbane, later this month.
You be prepared for them to heal yourself, your story about your family.
Carly Willis, NITV News.
And more than a dozen tribal groups from around Australia have come together in Queensland to discuss forming their own sovereign governments. Some have even begun discussions with foreign powers like China to invest in their communities. Carly Willis reports.
Leaders from 13 tribal groups met recently in Gimoy, Cairns. The inaugural forum was hosted by North Queensland's Yidinji Sovereign Government, which renounced ties with Australia a decade ago.
The intention behind the forum is to get all the tribes an opportunity to get their houses in order. if they want to govern themselves, that is. It's a lot of work.
Now, Cape York and Torres Strait leaders say it's time to take charge of their affairs through their own sovereign government structures.
We are sick and tired of being trodding on the wine press, being oppressed by the system, by your own people, the apartheid mentality. This is reality. We've got to face up to reality sometime.
Indigenous sovereignty is not recognised under Australian law, due largely to the lack of a national treaty with Indigenous peoples. The forum heard that Indigenous statehood brings international investment interests from world powers like China.
We met Chinese investors. They come and they're willing to help us move forward very fast, no game.
Leaders say they've been calling on the Australian government to help them protect significant sites, such as Pijinka, known as the tip of Cape York, which are coming under great tourism pressure.
We have to step out of the block, and we have to ask somebody to come and do it, because our people are getting old, our children have no interest. We have to have outcome on our projects before they lose their interest.
Hopes of building a better future for generations to come. Carly Willis, NITV News.
Our collection of artefacts of significant cultural importance to the Warramungu people of Tennant Creek in the Northern Territory has been returned at a formal handover ceremony in London. And the traditional owners who initiated the handback are encouraging other tribal groups around Australia to do the same. Marcella Senalanga reports.
After 1.5 years of negotiations, it was an emotional moment for Warramungu elders who travelled to the Honeyman Museum and Gardens in London to receive the artefacts.
These are artefacts that the old people sat down and had a look at it and cried about them and said straight away, we want them to come back home.
The items include a woomera, boomerangs, stone axes and a stone knife with a sheath. Elder Cliff Plummer said he didn't want to refer to the items as stolen. He says many of the items were traded for food and tobacco around 120 years ago. He says that he and fellow Warramungu elder Uncle Bill Arke Dagamara have been leading the movement to repatriate artefacts.
Well, it'll give some other like tribal groups a wake-up call too, you know, like they'll probably get up and contact the ATSIA team and whoever, you know, speak to us. How did we go about, you know, finding out... We've got artefacts here.
Around 120,000 cultural artefacts are known to be held in museums and private collections around the world, but experts believe there are many more waiting to be found.
They're part of a broader, reclaiming that history. I think it's a broader point about how does that bring about the cultural shifts that we'd like to see in the country, but also reinvigorating, strengthening culture locally, respecting and acknowledging the aspirations of those communities.
These treasures will eventually be displayed in the Ninkanyuyu Arts and Cultural Centre in Tennant Creek. Marcella Sinalunga, NITV News.
And that's all for our selection of stories and current affairs stories brought to us by NITV's NOLA program. We must now go to a break, but stay with us because when we come back, we'll hear from one of Waminda's chief executives, talking to us about the 40 years journey that the organization has traveled, empowering Aboriginal women's voices in health and leadership.
Visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio.
Make sure you get the full picture, not just what the social media feed gives you. Find all our news and stories at SBS Language website. Bookmark sbs.com.au/language in your web browser today.
Hey guys, Jackie White here, proud Wiradjuri man. You're listening to NITV Radio. Let's go.
Join the conversation. conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio, coming to you from Nam on the Kulin Nation this Monday afternoon. Now coming up next, have a conversation with Cleone Wellington, Waminda Chief Executive Leader, Culture and Connection, ahead of the 40th anniversary of Waminda. Waminda is a women's health and well-being Aboriginal corporation based on the south coast of New South Wales. But first, beautiful song, Dreamtime Stories by Coloured Stone. This song is a poignant reminder of the cultural significance of the Dreamtime and its continued relevance to Aboriginal communities today.
Different sort of creatures than colored mankind. They roamed this earth in search of ways, on and on through the night and days. And then one day they found their homes, learned the knowledge, and this was the place.
Join the conversation on radio, online, and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Waminda, a female-led Aboriginal women's health and well-being organisation based on the south coast of New South Wales, is celebrating its 40th anniversary. Joining us on NITV Radio to get some insights into the organisation and this remarkable milestone, I'm joined by Cleone Wellington, Waminda Chief Executive Leader, Culture and Connection. Cleone, thanks for joining us and welcome to NITV Radio.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Reflecting on Waminda's 40-year journey, what do you believe has been the most significant achievement in the organization's history?
That's a hard question because as an organization, 40 years, it's been a journey that's been up and down. It's come up against its challenges. When I think about the 40 years of Waminda, its greatest feat is just staying, you know, staying operational and actually been able to get to a year to say 40 years. Our biggest achievement just recently would be the birthing centre. So actually being able to come to a point in our existence where we can build our own birth centre in our own right and be able to have that reclamation of birthing and having it a ceremony. There's been plenty of different achievements along the years, and when I very first came to Waminda, there was 8 to 10 staff, and I've been at Waminda now for 16 years, and now we're at 170 staff. We operate out of 14 different buildings. You know, we own 3 of the different properties. So, yeah, there's actually been a lot of achievements that's actually happened, and I think the biggest thing is just being able to keep this space for our women where they feel safe and where they feel ownership and they can get the support that they need.
You've been with the organization for 16 years, which is almost half the organization's existence.
Yeah.
Can you share a personal story or memory from your time with Waminda that highlights the power of Aboriginal women's leadership?
I would think my own story, which is a lot of our staff members' stories within Waminda. When I first came, I was employed as a receptionist. And over those 16 years, I've been able to build on my skills, my knowledge, been able to go away and train in leadership and management, where I've been able to work my way up to then becoming a chief executive leader. So actually being able to run the organisation along for 3 other women. So, you know, I think that's a big achievement. So especially within my lifetime within Waminda is being able to work my way up to a role where as part of a shared leadership model where there's 4 of us Kuyu women standing beside each other, not just having the one CEO. So really pushing back on the westernised structure of what management and leadership looks like and actually making it ours and making it our way. And so I feel like for me, as an Aboriginal woman from our community. I've just been able to grow and find my voice and been able to find that leadership within myself and honour those that have walked this pathway before us and before me and been able to make this possible. And for all the other Koori women who are employed in our organisation, you know, who are in leadership roles, similar stories for them. You know, when people are employed, they're very rarely employed into a management role. All of our women have been grown, been built capacity and had training and been able to work their way up to being leaders. So, yeah, I think that's a big highlight for me. I never thought I'd be in a position that I'm in where I'm actually running an organisation beside three other women and doing this work.
You know, it's a unique leadership structure because usually you have one or two people just at the head, but Waminda has four chief executive leaders, including yourself. Mm. How did this, can you tell us a little bit more how the organisation came up with the idea of running structure with four executive leaders instead of one or two, because you have a co-chair, one chair and a co-chair and that's all, but you have four.
Yeah. So I think for us as an organisation, being a decolonising practice, so what that means is we do things our way, and whenever we're working as an organisation and our structures within the organisation, it's always about connecting back to who we are as a, you know, our culture, our law and our systems. When I think about our culture, you know, our leaders were our elders, and there was always a group of elders. There wasn't just one person. And so for us, when we think about our shared leadership, that's how we think about it. We think about it's actually reclaiming that leadership and that management and knowing that how we need it to run. And because of the organisation being such a large organisation and we're growing every year, we've got high retention rate, we're providing new programs, and like I said, we're building a birth centre, but we're also building a refuge and a rehab. That's a lot of work and that's a lot to carry. Just this year in July that we stepped into our roles or transitioned from being executive to chief executives, you know, there was the one CEO for all those years, but she was actually, Faye Warner, she was training us in our roles as executives and giving us the skills that we needed to make this transition, because we feel that being, you know, Aboriginal women, when we're working with our community, we are our community. We're not separate. So whatever our community carries, the trauma, you know, the impacts of colonisation, racism, that's actually us as four Koori women as well. So for us, it takes four of us to actually do this work together. And when talking about our shared leadership model, it's all about matriarchal structures and matriarchal ways of being, knowing and doing. So women always leading. And for us, we know that we can actually do the work we need to for our community 1,000 times better if we do it together. And there's four of us. And even though I'm saying there's four of us, there's actually more of us. You know, we've got other Koori women who are in leadership roles within Waminda who actually are a part of the senior balangs, and they stand beside us and walk this journey with us. So it's a really big load of responsibility and obligation that we have to, you know, carry out and deliver the services that we do. And we're really committed to that work. And, you know, we're passionate because this is our lives and this is our people and this is our families that we're trying to make a change for. And so for us, you know, it just seemed like a no-brainer to say, okay, well, how about the four of us lead? Because there was a time where we were like, oh, would you do the CEO position and the three of us be deputies? And we had that conversation, but we just feel, I suppose, more empowered to be together as the four of us. And it actually works within our organisation and our staff. We've brought our staff along that journey so that they can understand what that shared leadership model looks like, because, you know, it is different. A lot of people aren't doing a shared leadership model the way that we're doing it. And so our staff have been able to actually inform what that looks like as well and taking back their feedback. But yeah, for us, it's just knowing that there's four of us that actually hold this organisation and we hold the responsibility, and we know that we can do that 10 times better when we do that together.
It's a unique motto, and it sounds like the way you describe it as a very successful one. Now, to mark the 40 years, Waminda is holding a really big event, a strong women, strong community leading the way. It's a big conference. What message do you hope to convey to attendees, both Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal attendees at this conference?
Oh, look, I just think it's going to be amazing having all these Aboriginal women from all different clans from across the country coming together to share our stories, to share our knowledge, share our leadership and our wisdom, and being able to really get to the grassroots and talk about how can we change this for the betterment of our people across all different countries, you know. And when I say countries, I'm talking about clans within Australia. I think for me, when I think about the 40 years of Waminda, you know, we had our 40-year luncheon, which was for our local aunties to come together to celebrate them on their own. And then this being a national conference, we're able to invite women that we've met along our journey of the 40 years and being a part of different programs, different research, all different types of areas, and coming together to celebrate women together. But I think the biggest part of this is about, you know, we as women, we hold the responsibility within our families to make change, and we hold a lot of that with us. And so for us, we know that us as women, if we work together, you know, there's nothing we can't do, and we're a bit of an unstoppable force, I would like to say. And so I feel like that's what's going to come through at this conference. You're going to hear women who have been, you know, fighting for our people, fighting for our rights for a very long time, you know, in different areas, so in different sectors, government, non-government, you know, women who are coming through media, you know, there's all different areas, there's social and emotional well-being, you know, we're talking about nation building, you know, actually talking about how do we build up our communities, how do we build up our community so that they're no longer just surviving, but they're thriving, they're learning their culture, they're learning language, they're learning, you know, our practices, our protocols, but also being strong and being wealthy within the Western society. So, you know, we can have the best of our both worlds, because one world is our culture, our belonging, our identity, and the other world is this westernised world that we've been forced and conditioned to live in. But we want to thrive in both. And so I feel like this is what this conference is all about, just bringing all of us women together and being able to celebrate that as well. I feel like when we go away to conferences for too many times, it's always in a deficit. And it's true. Our people, you know, when we talk about closing the gap, when we talk about all those horrible statistics and how we die earlier and how our children are being removed, our people are being incarcerated, and, you know, even our youth, and there's all the deficit side of it, which is, it's truth-telling, but we want to talk about it in a way where it's strength-based. How do we come together and how do we make change, and how we're actually doing that together as community and as Aboriginal women.
Yeah, and the event is bringing together really some heavyweight in First Nations leadership, including the former Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Social Justice Commissioner, mm-hmm. Auntie June Oscar. You've got Auntie Jackie Huggins, Provera Yvette Rowe, Michelle Deschong, Professor Rowan West, Dr. Janine Getz, and many, many more. How did you manage to convince all these heavyweights to take time to join you in your conference?
All those women that you've just mentioned, they're women that we've actually connected with. So we've gone out, we've gone to, you know, we've seen some of them at conferences, and we've been really inspired about what they've done in their lifetime. Or, you know, we've gone on to their country, they've invited us as a model of care, of leadership of Aboriginal women. These women, we actually got a direct connection with them. And so for us, being able to bring them here onto our country, for some of them, it's, you know, they've been dying to come down to our country because they've had us on their country. And so it's about, you know, coming together and being able to share that. When you talk about these particular women, we're all like-minded. We all come together for our people. So it actually doesn't take much for us to come together and support each other. And being the only Aboriginal women's service in Australia, in the services that we provide and that wraparound holistic decolonizing practice of care, you know, no one else is doing that. So these women that we've invited, you know, they want to be a part of that, and we want them to be a part of this journey of Wominda, and we're a part of their journey. So it's always about that connection and about, you know, making that change for our people. And that's why I think that they're more than happy to come down and come to Nowra, which is on the south coast of New South Wales. You know, we're not a really big town, but I think these women know that the work that we do in our community, it can make change and it can make a difference. And so, and that's what they're doing in their community. So it's just, it just makes sense for us to come together and being able to share our journeys.
And that was Cleon Wellington, Wominda's Chief Executive, Leader, Culture and Connection, talking to us ahead of the 40th anniversary of Wominda, an Aboriginal women and health and well-being organisation. Now, you can find the full interview on our website, sbs.com.au/NITV Radio. We must now step aside for another break. When we come back, we'll explore recently passed misinformation laws that will give the government the power to compel social media giants like X or Meta to abide by Australia's misinformation laws.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio, coming to you from Nam on the Kulin Nation this Monday afternoon. Now, the nation's media regulator will be given the authority to crack down on tech companies such as Meta and X for misinformation and disinformation on their platforms. This comes as new laws introduced by the federal government will see social media companies placed under scrutiny for allowing the spread of fake news. Helena Krishnamurti reports.
The federal government has introduced new laws in response to the dangers posed by misinformation and disinformation in the digital age. They will crack down on big tech with the threat of significant fines. Communication Minister Michelle Rowland says some 75% of Australians are concerned about the harmful impacts of misinformation and disinformation.
Digital platforms can also serve as a vehicle for the spread of misleading or false information that is seriously harmful to Australians. The rapid spread of seriously harmful mis- and disinformation poses a significant challenge to the functioning of societies around the world.
She highlights the spread of false information surrounding Bondi Junction stabbing attack and a stabbing incident in Southport in the UK as alarming. The legislation would give the Australian Communications and Media Authority, ACMA, new powers, where it would be authorised to demand the social platforms keep their records and hand them over.
This bill seeks to strengthen the voluntary code by providing a regulatory backstop. The bill will empower the ACMA to review the effectiveness of digital platform systems and processes and will improve transparency about measures platforms have in place to protect Australians from mis- and disinformation on their services.
But independent Senator David Pocock says he's concerned the government is treading into uncharted territory.
In Australia, without a Human Rights Act, with some sort of, you know, Bill of Rights that enshrines freedom of expression, we have to tread carefully when we start talking about policing misinformation and people's views. I'm concerned that this legislation is essentially putting the onus on social media companies to deal with this. I don't think there's a huge amount of trust in those social media companies at the moment.
Ms. Rowland says the bill has carefully calibrated definitions of serious harms that aligns with Australia's human rights obligations, and breaking the law will come with significant financial penalties.
Digital platforms may be subject to civil penalties of up to 5% of global turnover for breaches of a standard and up to 2% for codes. These penalties are high. However, they may be necessary in response to egregious and systematic breaches and failure to act.
Senator Pocock is critical of the government's draft bill.
5% of global revenue, that's a big fine. What we've seen with Twitter or X is that they're trying to fine them and they're just not paying up. And so I think we really need the government to be willing to take on these social media giants who are playing an increasing role in shaping our societies, but don't want any responsibility for the things that they are spreading.
He also says it's really important for the government to deal with the growing threat around the use of generative artificial intelligence, especially around election campaigning.
I have real concerns about making social media companies the arbiters of truth, of them deciding what is and what isn't misinformation, particularly when they have these algorithms that there's no transparency. They are boosting things, putting things in front of people, and we don't know how that's actually working.
These laws have been long awaited and come after a draft bill was released last year. The federal government is also introducing a new separate legislation to outlaw what's known as doxing, where people who maliciously publish personal details about someone online could face a jail sentence of up to 7 years. Helena Krishnamurthy, SBS News.
Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio. Black magic.
You are now witnessing the power. And that was Black Magic by Baker Boy. And with this song, we come to the end of today's program. We'll be back with more news and stories from right across the country on Wednesday afternoon. Thanks for your company this Monday afternoon. I am Bertrand Tungandame, wishing you an excellent afternoon. Till next time, bye for now. Yalu.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.